Couch Potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Honk for Jesus, Save Your Soul, The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power, The Patient, Cooties, and Ghosts. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the Trailer Park and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Cat People on 4K. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
It's kind of a slow time for movies, and part of that is because Labor Day weekend has been notoriously one of the slowest weekends in theatrical releases going back decades. And while you have your aberrant hits, you know, like last year, right in the middle of the pandemic, we had Shang-Chi, Legends of the Ten Rings, did extremely well over that weekend. Generally, Labor Day's been very, very slow. And then on top of that, not even pandemic related, but more the fact that streaming services came of age during the pandemic. And the studios are still trying to figure out what to put on services, how much to put into theaters. And I know there's people that are 100% theatrical in terms of opinion, but the studios don't want to get rid of the streaming services because they're bringing in times hundreds of millions of dollars a month on those streaming services. So they need to be delivering new content. You can't just have a streaming service that people are going to pay a premium price for and only deliver like a library of legacy content. You got to have new stuff. You got to have a reason for people to keep coming on there. And each studio's trying different things, everything from the approach of Disney and Netflix putting a lot of original content on there, all the way down to HBO Max doing whatever the heck they're doing right now with their streaming service. But one of the big movies that I thought was going to be huge in September that's looking like it might start having some problems is that Don't Worry, Darling from Olivia Wilde, because what the heck's going on with Olivia Wilde? She is turning into a loose cannon as she's promoting the movie. And I mean, if you're not following any of this, first of all, there was this flap that Harry Styles, who stars in the movie in a supporting role, is getting paid extremely more than Florence Pugh, who's the star of the film. Now, I understand Harry Styles is a bigger name than Florence Pugh, even though Florence Pugh has her stands out there on the internet that are quite frankly, kind of terrifying. I don't know if anyone's plopping down money to see a movie with Florence Pugh in it because she's in it. She's still on her way. I mean, yeah, oh God, she got an Oscar nomination, all this kind of stuff going on, but I still don't think she's the name you can put on the poster and get people to pull money out of their pockets. Harry Styles might be that. But then Olivia Wilde, is this supposed to be such an empowering movie for women? But it appears that Florence Pugh was undercut in terms of finances. And it doesn't help that you're having sex with the person who is also in question here, because Olivia Wilde and Harry Styles now have a relationship going on. So you have that she tried to sort of spin as we're leading up to the Venice premiere of this movie. And then you have this whole Shia LaBeouf flap. And look, it is clear that Shia LaBeouf is a absolute train wreck of a human being and as good of an actor as he can be, although I don't think he's that good of an actor. I think he has a shtick. But when you lie about somebody, whether they're nice or not, you start putting out blatant false things that can be refuted, you run into problems, because Olivia Wilde came out and said that she got rid of and basically fired Shia LaBeouf off the set for that Harry Styles role. But then Shia LaBeouf came out and was like, no, I left this movie for my own reasons. And he produced a video of Olivia Wilde basically begging him to continue to stay on the film. So it's like, okay, now what is she saying? Is she just saying things because it sounds good in the narrative? Because there are people that are like that. They're a little bit narcissistic and they just sort of lie with whatever they want to at the time and usually don't get called on it unless you're super high profile. Well, now you've got Maggie Gyllenhaal doing this interview in Interview Magazine with Olivia Wilde, and she's basically come out, Olivia Wilde, and said, well, I starred in all these, and I won't use the term, but you know, these crappy movies, that's taught me how to be a director, how what to do and what not to do and blah, blah, blah. And forgetting the fact that there's already rumors that she and Florence Pugh were butting heads, which is partly what maybe caused Florence Pugh to pull back on the promotion of this movie. And honestly, how many movies can you say? I mean, I know she's been in a good number of movies, but how many movies can you say Olivia Wilde starred in, again, that her name was on the marquee or the poster, and that's what caused people to pull money out of their pockets? Just because you're in a movie does not mean you star in a movie. So this is coming up with the premiere in next week sometime at the Venice Film Festival. Has anyone actually seen this movie? I mean, the trailers make it look interesting, and it looks slick as snot, but is this movie even any good? It's kind of weird that we're like 3 weeks away from its release, and I don't know anyone who's seen the movie. Even high-level people in the press who normally get to go to these junkets and stuff. This, to me, says, are we even going to get it screened? I have a feeling this could be a massive flop, and she's burning through her goodwill, and already people are like, I'm tired of hearing about Olivia Wilde. So it may not do any good for this, and she might end up tanking her career, because Booksmart was a really neat movie, but this is something that's much meatier and dicier and a little bit more complex. And this might be like when Ava DuVernay did A Wrinkle in Time after coming off of Selma and just kind of turned it into a train wreck. So we'll see what happens with that. What's interesting with the box office, I was talking about, the movies last week were absolutely dismal. The Invitation won, but it only had 6.8 million. And the winner from the previous week, Dragon Ball, was down like something like to 4.7 million. And that was like an 80% drop into fifth place. 3,000 Years of Longing, which was supposed to be a big movie, and they spent $60 million on, got only 3 million. And Breaking was $1 million, like in place 15 behind the Rogue One IMAX re-release. So yeah, it's a slow time for movies out there. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is the movie Weird, which comes to the Roku channel on November 4th.
I'm tired of people thinking I'm some kind of joke.
Your dad and I agreed it will be best if you just stop being who you are and doing the things you love.
My whole life, all I wanted.
I'm afraid we found your son at a polka party.
Just to make up new words to a song that already exists.
Oh. Well, you should do that then.
Ooh, my little hungry one, open up a package of my banana.
This is a kind of a parody of a rock biopic for Al Yankovic, or Weird Al Yankovic, and I've always been a big fan of Weird Al. He's a lot of fun, and apparently he's like the nicest guy on the planet. So I'm curious to see what they come up with. I also think it's interesting it's going to the Roku channel. I'm looking forward to it. I love the fact that Daniel Radcliffe is like, I'll do whatever. So the next movie I want to talk about is Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey.
We're not going to find them.
We will. Pooh, Piglet, Eeyore, we were friends for many years.
Christopher, we need to leave. Now.
I really need to find out what's happening, okay?
We need to go. There's Laura's dead. There's someone else outside.
We used to be friends. Why are you doing this, please? I would have never left, I swear. I swear.
The characters of Winnie the Pooh from the A.A. Milne stories slipped into public domain. Now, Disney still has the trademark on them, so you can't have them with no pants and a red shirt, and there's certain things you can't do with them. And I don't think you can have Gopher, because I think Gopher was created for the Disney version. But the A.A. Milne things, if you can attach it to that and not the Disney stuff, it's in the public domain. So somebody made a slasher movie for this, which I don't know. The trailer doesn't look that good, I have to say. It looks like it's a bit crap. But it's making a lot of buzz simply because it's taking Winnie the Pooh and making a slasher movie, and they are right on top of it. So I give them points for capitalizing on it very quickly. Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Honk for Jesus, Save Your Soul, and The Patient.
Thank you.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews and talk about the only one that's new in terms of a wide release in theaters, and that is Honk for Jesus, Save Your Soul. This mockumentary tells the story of a Southern Baptist preacher and his wife trying to restart their congregation for their megachurch after he fell from grace.
Pastor Lee Curtis Childs faces allegations of misconduct. His megachurch may never be the same.
Lee Curtis and I, we're going to get to the other side.
Showtime.
Lee Curtis is a talent, a star.
We can edit around that, right?
This is going to chronicle the ultimate comeback. I'm a sinner, but I'm no criminal.
We need you back in that pulpit so you can get me back on that stage.
First of all, it's being released in theaters and on the Peacock streaming service. And if you remember earlier this year, they had Marry Me and Firestarter were two movies that Universal did that went day and date to theaters and streaming. And of course, obviously next month, famously, Halloween Ends is also taking that route. So Universal and Focus are still playing around with this day and date thing. So, you know, we'll see if that continues into 2023. But you can only get this if you pay for the service. So you've got to pay like $5 for a month for the service. And I know a lot of people will, I'm just going to get it for that free trial. I mean, if you really want to, it's $5 a month for crying out loud. It's $5 a month. But anyways, in Honk for Jesus, Save Your Soul, it's done in a mockumentary style. And the directors grew up in a megachurch or in Southern Baptist teachings. And at the time where the megachurches were becoming very, very big, you know, there's sort of the rise of the megachurches. Because they grew up with this, they have a lot of affinity to that church experience. But also as they grew up, they saw a lot of the darker side to it. And this is them trying to skewer the hypocrisy of a situation like this, but also treat it with love. Treat it with a point of saying, just because these people are not acting properly does not mean that church is canceled on their own. You can always go to a different church. So I think that there is that underlying message in there. You know, so for people who are going to say, well, this is anti-Christian, I don't necessarily think that's what's happening here. I think this is showing the pitfalls and the problems that can happen when you heap this much power and attention on the wrong kind of people. But you can always go to another church. If there's any sort of positive message to take out of this movie, that's what it is. On the other hand, it does show a lot of the problems in a megachurch. And look, I am not a big fan of the prosperity gospel movement. I'll just come out and say that right now. I think it's antithetical to the teachings in the Bible and the teachings of Christ. I mean, there are entire books of the Bible that talk about the antithesis of prosperity gospel. You know, this goes back to like some of these televangelists like Kenneth Copeland, and they, oh, just give us more money, and it becomes about money, and it becomes the avarice of this. And they really show that avarice. That's one of the seven deadly sins, the avarice, where greed is minor compared to the greed of avarice. And of course, you've got Sterling K. Brown as the preacher. And he is more about the glamour of it. He is more about the attention. He wants to be seen as the leader. It's Regina Hall as the puppet master pulling the strings that really make this insidious. And she's just wanting to get back to that lifestyle they have. And remember the movie The Irishman. There were so many teachable moments and so many points where he could have learned and grown as a person, and he never does. He never realizes his life he was living was bad, and he never acknowledges that, and he never faces it, and that's sort of the tragedy of that movie. And that's what you get with this, where she sees this as hers. She sees this as something that she owns and deserves and has almost a divine right to. It does sort of skirt a little bit on the sleaziness. What's interesting, I worked on a film that involved the preacher Leroy Jenkins, and he's dead now, so I can say whatever I want to about him. And let me tell you, that guy was creepy on his own. I mean, it was like when he walked into a room, it was a giant ball of Brill Cream kind of rolled past you. I mean, it was some of the weird stuff that I heard about going on in that church. I mean, remember, this was the guy who like married somebody who just won the lottery, who was like this woman with dementia. And I mean, it's, so the idea of being involved in the church is a good thing, but you can always direct your power to bad things. And the movie itself, it uses this mockumentary style, but it has trouble sort of balancing it, because at times it breaks away from it. At times you're with the cameras and then you're sort of behind the scenes. When you finally figure it out how to tell the difference, it gets a little confusing. It makes some great points, but I think it gets in its own way at times. I'm still going to say it kind of rocks. I mean, this skewers the hypocrisy, replete, and prosperity gospel with some sharp performances, but it pulls a couple too many punches.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next thing I want to talk about really quickly is The Patient. It's a series on Hulu. I think it's on FX, but it's premiering on Hulu. You can catch it on Hulu now. In The Patient, Steve Carell stars as a therapist who is kidnapped by a serial killer wishing to be cured.
I want you. I want the expert. I'm not normal. I need to get better.
Anyone who has come this far, who has made the choice to come to therapy and keep hammering away at the hard things, they can be helped.
But I have got bigger problems. I have a compulsion to kill people. So should I tell you more about my life?
Now, I always have been a fan of the serial killer patient connection. I mean, going all the way back to Silence of the Lambs is sort of like the pinnacle. They didn't even mention that in this series. And it's a half hour show. And that's what's interesting about it. I mean, these episodes go fast because it's dramatic. It's not a comedy. So the episodes feel very short because you're conditioned to expect something to be an hour long if it's a dramatic show. But Steve Carell is given a chance to do something understated and unique. And Donald Gleason plays the serial killer, and he's creepy. I like the fact that he plays it low key. He doesn't come in kind of, hey, he's not crazy. He doesn't overdo it, because that's not how serial killers really are. He is creepy and very understated, and you feel there's a real danger there because you don't know what's under the surface. It's just got two episodes right now. You burn through those, like I said, very, very quickly. It's very interesting. It has some open-ended stuff, but it's not a comedy. Even though it has Steve Carell in it and it's a half-hour series, it's a darker deconstruction of what can go on. I mean, this is a dark look at the ups and downs of therapy and the ability to compartmentalize, which is something you have to do. Because here's the thing, if you know any therapists, some of these therapists are more screwed up than their patients. But what makes you a good therapist is your ability to be removed from the situation. You are approaching something outside of reality. And there is the thing of like, oh, you're just sort of like on this lofty chair making notes. But you need that, because you don't need to be dealing with a everyday human being, because when you break that veil of therapy and the person becomes human and not somebody giving you advice, then you see their flaws and then you start questioning and working that into their diagnosis. So I think there's an underlying look at that doctor-patient relationship. So I'm going to have to say that The Patient totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I have a look at some older content, including Cooties and Ghosts. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews. And let's acknowledge the fact that it is officially Halloween season. I am declaring that. I know it's early September. I know it's still hot out. But I started this last year, and the internet has gotten behind me on it. I said, I am not just going to start horror movie season in October. There's just not enough time. In 2020... we were robbed of a lot of the celebrations you can have. You really couldn't have an effective Halloween. You couldn't do the Halloween parties. You couldn't do the haunted houses. Halloween was really hampered during the pandemic, and we got a little bit of it back last year. I like to start celebrating Halloween and the fall. Everything from pumpkin spice lattes to candy corn to horror movies, I like to start that in September. And I'm just declaring it. So you get 61 days instead of 31. So I'm starting off with my horror movie watching. Now, one of the things, if you go to my Facebook page at facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies, you go down a couple posts. I've got this post somebody had made for, it was a comic book site, but it basically gives your 31 days of horror movies for the different streaming services. I think it has Netflix and Prime and Tubi and HBO Max. Now, of course, as a horror movie fan, I've seen most of these movies listed. So, I mean, there's something like five different pages, and there's 150 movies. I've seen most of them. There's about 40-some that I haven't seen. So I said, oh, I'm going to put those on a list. I'm going to watch those over the course of the season. Unfortunately, the stuff on Hulu is a little bit spotty because, you know, you have rights change at the end of every month. So not everything on that list is available. But that's where I'm sort of pulling some of my, I haven't watched this movie, let's watch this. And the first one I've had on my list for a while, and that is Cooties, which stars Elijah Wood as a substitute teacher who takes a job in summer school only to face a zombie outbreak with the students.
What are you, sick or something?
Oh, look, carnage.
You can't eat the teachers, man.
What's going on? That girl Shelly has cooties.
He's right.
This is a foodborne virus.
The chicken nuggets.
Virus is only dangerous if you haven't gone through puberty.
Are you kidding me?
They're everywhere.
That's Indiana. That's Ohio.
It's an epidemic.
Let's roll.
I remember when this came out, I think it was a 2015 or so, 2014. And I remember it just blipping and disappearing. And then it showed up on one of the streaming services and I put it on my list to watch. And I never got around to watching it. And they have the Rotten Tomatoes rating and the audience rating on there, which weren't very good. That's the unfortunate thing is you're ready to hit play and you know that it's got like a 30% and you're like, uh-oh, is this going to be any good? So I watched it and it's written by Lee Whannell, who did... He's got a big name in horror. He created the Saw franchise or helped create the Saw franchise with James Wan, but he also did The Invisible Man recently or a couple years ago at least. So it has a lot of names behind it. You got Elijah Wood in it. You've got Allison Pill. You've got Rainn Wilson, Jack McBrayer in there. There's a lot of recognizable names in this movie. A lot of them coming from the comedy side because this is not meant to be taken seriously. It's about a zombie outbreak in an elementary school. Which either has to be a comedy or a dark, dark, dark horror movie. And it ends up being a comedy. And the idea and the storyline, it does follow a pretty standard zombie outbreak type story because what ends up happening is chicken nuggets get infected and then these kids eat it and it only affects somebody who hasn't gone through puberty yet. The problem with the movie is it doesn't know when to be funny. It doesn't know really when to completely lean into the humor. And unfortunately, we're at a time right now that, you know, everyone's like, oh, everyone's offended at everything. And it's not even that. It's more violence happening in an elementary school is very uncomfortable to look at now, especially after the Uvalde school shooting, the Robb Elementary school shooting. But going all the way back to Sandy Hook in 2012, which predates this movie, violence in elementary schools is, it's a really hard sell. especially when the kids are the monsters. Now, there was a movie called Little Monsters, I think it was, and it was on Hulu, starring Lupita Nyong'o, and that was a zombie-type movie, but the kids were the protagonists. They were trying to escape the zombies, and that one framed it a little bit better and a little bit more comfortable. And I know horror movies are about being uncomfortable, but this one does get a little bit too uncomfortable at times because the monsters are the kids. And so it's like it could have leaned into that as satire more. It could have leaned into it more as a darker horror movie or just a biting comedy. But it gets close, but it kind of backs off. It doesn't fully commit to it. And finally, when it does kind of commit to that framework, it just becomes a creature feature at that point. And some of the jokes don't quite land, and there's some things that don't make a whole lot of sense in terms of the humor that's aimed at the film. But it has these elements to it that I appreciated. I wouldn't say it's a good movie, though. I mean, it doesn't commit enough to make the premise pop, and it does end up reaching for jokes and sinks into bad taste. Like I said, you're talking about horrible things happening at an elementary school. That's a hard sell in today's world, especially for me. My wife's a teacher. She teaches third grade. So it's not that you can't do that. It's that you got to do it right, and they don't really kind of hit a balance with the tone. So I'm going to have to say this kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Ghosts. I'm talking about the original Ghost series. I know there's a Ghost series on, was it at CBS? I think you can get Ghosts, and it's like a couple seasons on Paramount Plus. But I'm talking about Ghosts, the original BBC series that the American version is based on. This BBC series follows a married couple who inherit a manor in the British countryside only to discover it is haunted.
I'm calling to inform you that you have, in fact, inherited a house.
This is it.
It's all ours.
What did that girl just say?
She must be related to you.
This is going to make one incredible hotel.
What will become of us?
We could always try haunting.
Get out, get out.
Hello!
Get out, get out, get out.
Me again!
Get out, get out.
This is all happening so fast.
Christy!
It's your classic haunted house.
This is currently available on HBO Max. God knows how long anything's going to be available on HBO Max, because they're slashing content left and right, and who knows how they're going to restructure things. But Warner Brothers has always been, for years, a recipient of some of the BBC programming, going all the way back to Doctor Who and Merlin and Primeval, a lot of these TV series, especially in the early part of the 21st century. So this is likely going to stick around on HBO Max. But first of all, the woman who plays Allison in it, I have a thing for her. She was in one of the episodes of Doctor Who. I think it was a Dalek episode. And that's when I first saw her. And I really like her. I think she's very funny. And the ghosts that inhabit this manor, she can see him because she falls down the stairs and hits her head. So she sees all these ghosts, and they're just people who have died in or around the house, but they appear as they died. Like, there's this one guy who was in a duel, and so he's got a hole in his stomach because that's where he was shot. There's a politician, an MP, a member of parliament, who doesn't have any pants on. He perpetually just spends his afterlife without pants on. And there was a woman who had burned in a fire, so she's all smoky, and you know, they've got plague children and stuff like that running around. And it's very clever and it's cute. It loses a bit of cohesiveness trying to tell the full story, but it does have an interesting element where it does go back and tell the backstory periodically of these ghosts and how they got to where they are. And that's very interesting. But ultimately, it's clever and it's cute. And because it's a British show, there's only like 6 or 8 episodes a season. I think there's 3 seasons, you know, so like the entirety of the BBC version of Ghosts fits into 1 season of the American series. And once I finish this one, I'm still in the 3rd season. I'm going to go and watch the American series. But I think this is cute. And it's horror adjacent. It's not exactly, even though it does deal with ghosts, it at least falls into that category. So it works for sort of the spooky watching. The cast is great. I mean, it's a top-notch cast and delivers a clever series with a unique, awkward sitcom spin. I'm going to have to say Ghosts from the BBC rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to look at the Lord of the Rings, the Rings of Power series on Prime, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Cat People in 4K. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's wrap things up with the Lord of the Rings. This is on Prime Video. Obviously, the most famous Lord of the Rings adaptations were the Peter Jackson Lord of the Rings series, which was beloved and won Oscars, and it was a huge hit about 20 years ago, a little bit more than 20 years ago when they started. And then they wanted to cash in a little bit more. Warner Brothers and New Line Cinema decided to make The Hobbit, and they split it into 3 movies. So they kind of overbloated The Hobbit. But I gotta say, I like The Hobbit movies. I arguably like them a little more than the Lord of the Rings movies, because I guess I identify more with dwarves than anything else. So even though I admit that the Lord of the Rings movies are a more consistent story and a richer story, I feel the Hobbit's a little more digestible, even though it is a little bit bloated. But Amazon Prime got the rights to do a Lord of the Rings series that is unrelated to Peter Jackson completely. Anyways, in the Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power, this Prime Video series tells a story of Galadriel fighting against Sauron in the Second Age 3,000 years before the Fellowship of the Ring.
Elves have forests to protect. Dwarfs their mines. Mend their fields of grain. But we Harfoots have each other.
For I must now wander this wandering day.
We're safe.
You have fought long enough, Galadriel. Put up your sword.
The enemy is still out there. The question now is where?
I've never read The Lord of the Rings. I've read The Hobbit, because I'm a child at heart. But I've never read the full Lord of the Rings books. I certainly haven't touched the appendices. And this is based on The Lord of the Rings books, but also the appendices, because there's only so much that Tolkien wrote. And he really only wrote the four books, you know, the Lord of the Rings, the three books, and then The Hobbit. And then he wrote all these appendices that sort of enriched the background of it. And if you go to the special features of either the Lord of the Rings set or the Hobbit set, there's a lot of playing with the appendices. And there's stuff in the Hobbit that they brought in from the appendices that doesn't actually exist in the books themselves. So, I mean, this is not just drawing from the books, it's drawing from the books about the books. At least they're Tolkien inspired, but it's like making a Star Wars movie based on Wikipedia rather than the original Star Wars films. And I have to admit, I'm just not well versed in it. I don't know a lot about the history. There's a lot of stuff that's going over my head. Weirdly enough, I make more sense out of this than I did about The House of the Dragon, which is the Game of Thrones series. And you can't help connecting those two, or at least comparing those two, because they kind of both premiered within 2 weeks of each other, and they're both high fantasy series. Game of Thrones is a lot more pragmatic. It's a little more simple because it's just about these houses, and this is the story of Middle Earth, but you've got the elves and the dwarves and these hobbits, and so you have all these different creatures, and of course men, human beings as well, in The Lord of the Rings. So it's a little bit more of a diverse world. First of all, The Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power, is gorgeous looking. I mean, they really lean into the production design. And yes, you can tell that they're CGI matte paintings and backdrops and CGI effects. But that's kind of, I guess it's kind of part of the charm of this series. I mean, it's a beautiful looking series, and it's kind of jaw-dropping at times. Whereas House of the Dragon, it has these impressive vistas and these impressive scenes, but it's darker and heavier and I guess a little more realistic because they're castles built by men, where, of course, you've got these gorgeous elf land and city. You know, of course, the little hobbit grove where these hobbits live is a little more rustic, and the city where the men, or the town where the men live, is more rustic. But you have some very grand landscapes and grand design that you can use with the dwarves and the elves. My biggest problem is, of course, Galadriel is one of the main characters in this, and I'm just exhausted by the elves. The elves are so exhausting. It's like going out and hanging out with people who have no sense of humor, and everything's serious, and they're like, oh, this is the land of whatever, and this is this, and everything is grand and requires a speech, and everything from your sword to your fork is named after what happened to it beforehand. So, I mean, the elves are fully exhausting in this, and I identify more with the dwarves that are more rustic and have a little more fun, and like I said, that's, I think, why I like the Hobbit movies. There's a lot of setup in this series, so it's got action to it. Don't get me wrong, it's actually got more action than The House of Dragon, but it is setting up this backdrop and all these different characters, and there's some like Elrond and Galadriel who you've seen in these later films because, of course, they're immortal beings. But you know, if you don't know your Tolkien, it's going to take some time figuring this all out. I mean, you may want to have to go look at the Wikipedia page to figure out, but it's lavish and high on action. There's just a lot to juggle with the series, which is a bit heavy in the setup. But still, I'm going to say it kind of rocks. I'm looking forward to more.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is on Cat People, which is coming to 4K, or it's out on 4K, from Scream Factory, or that's a division of Shout Factory. That is, of course, the 1982 remake of sorts. Paul Schrader, the director, doesn't like to call it a remake, but it's a remake. And it stars Natasha Kinski and Malcolm McDowell as mysterious ancient creatures that change form based on sexual activity.
I'm so green.
I didn't think you were ready, but you are. I knew it when I saw you with him. Your whole body burns.
I'm not like you!
You tell yourself that it's love, but it isn't. It's blood. Death.
I remember when this movie came out, I remember it did get skewered by critics because it was all about sex. And that's really all it is. It is all about sex. This is the era of the early 80s was that time for the psychosexual thriller drama. I mean, this is the time where you either had the hard-boiled detective sex thriller like Body Heat, or you had some sort of supernatural element to it, something like, Altered State. I don't know why I pulled two William Hurt movies out of my mind for this one, but this was very popular. The adult, it's not pornographic, but it could be, you know what I mean? And of course you have Natasha Kinski and she's naked in it. Not a big surprise. She's pretty much naked in almost anything she did at the time. So the movie itself, it doesn't quite hold up. There's some wonderful things in it. I mean, the soundtrack's fantastic and the David Bowie theme is awesome in it. And just the idea behind it and some of the concepts are very compelling, but the character's just all about, it's all obsessed with sex. Even the character of John Hurt, who's supposed to be kind of the hero of the whole thing, he's just trying to get laid. I mean, that's literally all it is. Now, one of the best parts of it is the Annetta Tool character, and there's a whole sequence with her in a pool, and of course she's topless because you gotta have the sex part to it, but it does throw back to the original Cat People. And I know the original Cat People from 1942 is seen as more of a B-movie, kind of a crappy horror movie, but it's actually a really good film. But this is more a relic of its time, and it's fascinating to watch as the relic, because at a certain point, even, you know, as a viewer today, you're like, oh my god, can we just quit being so obsessed about sex? Because it's just sex, sex, sex. That's all it's about. And it does show this sort of immaturity of films back in the 80s. It's sort of like the teenager who finds his dad's Playboys and is looking through them, is all titillated by him. When at a certain point you're like, yeah, it's just nude women. You know, then when you become an adult and you can go buy a Playboy yourself, it's not all that exciting. There's a, you know, it just feels like it's breaking these taboos. But I mean, it's kind of this classic, and it's weird that it came out. You know, you got to look at yourself and say, this is the year, same year E.T. came out. But I mean, the 4K looks good. And the special features, which are all on the Blu-ray part, most of them are interviews, and they're, I think they're interviews they did for the Blu-ray release several years ago. But I mean, they got like interviews with, you know, people like Natasha Kinski and John Hurt and Paul Schrader, the director, he's being interviewed. And they've got some legacy stuff from when the DVD first came out back about 20 years ago. Cause Shout Factory and Scream Factory put a lot of special features in the Blu-ray, DVD, 4K releases. So it's not just the film. So you got the film in 4K, which looks really good, and you got the film in Blu-ray. As a package, it's really worth checking out. But the movie itself, like I said, it's a relic. You know, it's dripping in 80s psychosexual atmosphere, though it doesn't really hold up outside of its era, but it still does offer some nice imagery and a solid soundtrack. So I'm going to have to say Cat People kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
And that wraps things up. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Pinocchio and Clerks 2, two very different movies. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.